Our speaker for this evening is Chris, who will be sharing his experience, strength, and hope.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm grateful to be here to talk to you and share the things that have happened to me over the last 2.5 years. I came in the room, a little over 2 years ago, and there's been changes in my life that have been absolutely amazing, and I'm hoping that I can keep them together. I've made some notes to try to stay in order so that they make sense, because I want to share them with you, because they've changed my life. When I think about it, I sometimes become speechless, so hopefully tonight I won't become speechless. When I first came into the rooms, I'll share with you first the big events that have happened over the last 2 years, and then I made some notes on just some things of how I used to be and how I am now, or how things are different from the way they used to be. Some of the big events, when I first walked into the rooms, I just came in to lose weight. I was over 300 pounds, and I was unhealthy and very unhappy, and somebody in my family in another program, that's in another 12-step fellowship, asked me if I wanted to try an OA meeting, and I said I would, and I went to the Sunday night Edison meeting, and I sat down, and I just had gotten to lose weight, like I hear everybody else say, and I walked in, and there was a woman sharing who was probably 15, 20 years my senior, and I started hearing her tell my story, which I've heard from all of you over and over again, the same thing, that you heard your story come out of somebody else's mouth, and that had a lot of power for me. Especially to hear from somebody of the opposite sex who was older, who I figured wouldn't have anything in common with, they're saying things that it was just blowing me away. They were admitting that they were emotionally insecure, and that hit me in a place that was very private, and at that meeting I began to think about the possibility that could that be part of my compulsive overeating, that I'm emotionally immature, because I knew deep down I was. I never related it to food, though. And that started it at my first meeting. That got me to come back. Somebody said to me at my first meeting, give it five, give it five meetings and before you make up your mind whether you like it or not. And I said, well, that I can do. I also heard, try to become willing. And I kind of kept that in the back of my head, and I heard that a lot. As I continued to come back to meetings, I heard more and more, and I related more and more to people. And within the first month of being in program, the first Long Beach Island retreat came up, and I decided I wanted to go because I thought I would learn how to eat properly. I knew they supplied food there, and I was still looking for a food plan. I was brand new in program. I didn't really understand any of the steps or really understand any of it, but I figured I better learn how to eat, so I'd go to a retreat. So I signed up for that, and my wife was kind of, you're going where with who and what's going on here. So I went to the LBI retreat and did not learn how to eat. It was a buffet, and I didn't understand that. But what happened on that weekend changed my life. The retreat was on step two, and coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I listened to what people had to say that Friday night and all day Saturday. I was just in different workshops that talked about step two, and I did not believe in God. I walked into the rooms not believing in the God that I was raised on. And I really didn't want to have anything to do with the God part. But I also was trying to become willing to at least begin to listen, that there's a possibility that some people here are getting help, and that they're doing something that I don't understand, and maybe if I pay attention and keep an open mind, maybe that will help me. So I listened throughout that Saturday to a bunch of workshops on step two, and that night I went out to the beach after midnight, and I was just walking. It was a beautiful night. It was a huge moon. I sat down on the beach and was just kind of staring up at the moon and looking out at the ocean for quite a while. And I just began to get a sense that something was happening. And I want to preface, I'm going to tell you what happened as I was sitting there. I want to preface that with a very, very short story. 20 years prior to that night on the beach at LBI, I had, at my parents' demand, I had gone to an alcohol rehab when I was 19. It was on an outpatient basis. And I spent 2 days there, and I decided I didn't have a problem, and I was going to leave. So I told the director there that I was going to leave, and they took me in their office and said, you're an alcoholic, and this is your only real chance. You know, you're going to be back. If you leave now, you're going to be back. And I, ha, 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 I'm 19 years old. I had my convertible outside. Get away from me. I jumped in my car, and I took off. And the reason I tell that is because as I sat there on LBI, I realized that as I began to think, is there possibly a God that can help me here? Is there, you know, as I'm looking at this gigantic moon and this gigantic ocean, and I just spent a day listening to people talk about becoming open to the idea of the possibility of a God, I made a couple of realizations. I realized that I had come back. That the way I was treating food was exactly the way I treated alcohol. I had stopped drinking 10 years prior, cold turkey, and figured I had it licked, and they were still all wrong. It had nothing to do with, you know, it just was a matter of my willpower. I could stop drinking. The part of that story that I leave out is that I just started eating. The day I stopped drinking, I just started eating, and I put on easily 130, 140 pounds, whatever it was. So I put down the bottle and I picked up a fork. It was my old tagline. So as I sat there on the beach, I realized that person said to me 20 years before, you will be back. And I realized I'm back. It was my first time in any kind of a program. I don't know if that rehab was using the big book. I'm assuming they probably were. I wasn't paying any attention. But the guy was right. I had come back. And what that meant, the implication of that was that I had been wrong for 20 years. That a lot of the things I thought were correct and I thought were normal, a lot of my behaviors, a lot of the things I was doing I thought was okay, it all kind of came crashing down on me on the beach that it wasn't. That it was not okay to be 320 pounds. It was not okay to be angry all the time. And it was incredibly powerful. So I sat there for probably, God, it had to be 2 hours just looking out and getting this feeling like it was an overwhelming feeling of relief that there may be an answer here, but it was an overwhelming feeling of, holy shit, I'm 38 years old. I can't start over. What am I going to do? This is not going to work because I didn't understand the rest of the steps yet. So keep listening because it gets better. The rest of the steps explain to me how to deal with the fact that at age 38, I have to come to the realization that my way definitely was not working. So I became willing to admit that night for the first time that I did not have the answer. And that started the real beginning of OA for me. I went back to the rooms after I came back from that and decided that I had to begin getting a relationship with some higher power, at least become willing. And I went in, and I still was very, you know, I don't know if it's going to work for me. And somebody said, act as if. And I said, well, what does that mean? They said, well, just act as if you believe. And I said, well, okay. And I would do that, and I'd stand in front of my refrigerator, I swear to you, I would stand in front of my refrigerator, and I would say, okay, God, all this food is in there, keep me from eating it. And he did. And it began, it absolutely began to happen where I became willing to pick a food plan, and I did. Three, none, and one. Three meals a day, nothing in between. One day at a time. And I began to, every evening after my dinner, began to turn over the night to God because I had never spent a night after 6 o'clock night eating, ever. I mean, that was not even a possibility. And it became, we call it a pink cloud, I guess, it became almost easy for that first year to not do that. And I know that was strictly by the grace of God. He was freeing me up to pay attention to my step work and the other stuff I needed to do to change the way I was acting. So he relieved me of that for a long time. So I acted as if, and I slowly, I think the first major time that I felt it working for me is because I was surrendering the food and that was happening, and I said, okay, well that could be a lot of things. I was driving to a business function and in Princeton, and it was a meeting with a group of lawyers that I was wholly unprepared for, and I didn't realize it until I was driving down there how unprepared I was. And I was overcome with this sense of absolute fear that I was not qualified to be handling this meeting with these people, and that I had no idea what I was going to do because I couldn't talk my way out of it because I just couldn't do it. And I had this overwhelming fear that was familiar to me, but I hadn't had it since I'd been in program. I hadn't had that overwhelming, oh my God, I got to pull over, I'm not going, I got to call and tell them I'm sick, can't do it. But I didn't have a choice. I had to go there. There were at least three lawyers that I was aware of that were meeting me there for a specific purpose to meet with me. And I was driving down Route 1, and I just began to get very, very agitated and upset. And I just said, God, I need you to come here and help me. Sit down with me. Sit down next to me and come with me to this meeting. And this amazing feeling came over me of absolute well-being that I cannot describe. I've never felt anything like it in my life. It was just this feeling that everything was going to be fine, and it came as a direct result of that request. And it was at that moment I absolutely knew that I had a higher power, and the higher power would listen to me and would help me when I asked for it. There was nothing left to chance there. It wasn't maybe something else. I knew exactly what it was. And I went to that meeting, and I was as peaceful and serene as can be throughout the meeting. And I was asked, and when I sat down at the meeting, six more lawyers than I expected from the opposing side walked in, and I didn't even know were going to be there, and it was absolutely fine, and because I was not alone, and that not being alone has been a recurring theme over the last 2 years, which has really been the basis of what's changed my life is the not being alone part, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. I guess the next really big event for me was my step four inventory, which came. Actually, let me back up a little bit. The first 4 months of the program, I did not want a sponsor because I didn't want anybody messing up my program. I say that a lot. I'd read everything, and I was starting to get this relationship with God, and I didn't want anybody else getting in the way and telling me what to do. So I went to, there was a sponsorship workshop, and I went to that and listened to people talk about sponsors and sponsorship, and I was like, okay, that's great, but I don't want anybody telling me what I have to do, and I don't want anybody messing up my perfect program. And somebody came up to me and said, do you have a sponsor yet? A man came up to me, and I didn't know, and said, do you have a sponsor yet? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, what are you afraid of? And I said, who the hell? I didn't say it to him. I said, well, I don't know. And I walked away. And I was very agitated. I said, who the hell is this guy stepping on my wonderful program where I come to and I'm relaxed and I'm you know, working it exactly as I should be, and he comes up and has the gall to tell me I'm afraid of something? And I left that meeting, and I was walking with a family member who's in another 12-step program a few days later, and I told them the story and said, it really is bothering me. And they said, if it's bothering you 3 days later, my person said, if it's bothering you 3 days later, there's probably something to it. There's probably something to what they said. And it made me think. Within 3 days, I had a sponsor. Because it was bothering me because it was true. I was afraid to have a sponsor. I was afraid someone was going to tell me to do something that I didn't want to do. And it was the most important thing I did since coming into program, I would say, as far as working the mechanics of the program, was to get a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for 2 years. I speak to that sponsor every day. A line I want to throw in that I heard from somebody else is, I sponsor, I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, which I feel is a very important part of the program, that constant connection, no matter what's going on, that constant connection with another person who understands me is critical. If I start lying to myself or start getting off track, a simple conversation with that person can bring me immediately back to where I am, to know what I need to do. So that's my plug for sponsorship. If you don't have a sponsor, get one tomorrow. What are you afraid of? So back to step four. Step four was a huge transformational process for me. Going into it, a week before I started step four, I said, I don't have anything to put in it. It's going to be a short thing. I really don't have anything. I don't have any resentments. I don't have anything. It's going to be really quick. And thank, gratefully, my loving sponsor took me by the hand and walked me through thinking about what would go into my fourth step. And she told me to relax and take my time and to do a thorough job. And I said things like, well, I heard people do it in an afternoon. And I heard, you know, that you could always do it over again. And she said, I'm just going to tell you the way I did it. You know, it's all I can do is tell you how I did it. And the way I did it was I did it thoroughly, and it took me a while. So I did that. She said, just start writing down. And we studied out of both the AA 12 and 12 and the AA and the OA 12 and 12s, 2 pages at a time. I would study them as I was doing my eighth step, my fourth step, to kind of keep me along in the process. And at the end, I ended up with 18 pages of stuff that I don't know where it came from, but it was all there. And there were two huge elements of my fourth step. The first was the fifth of reading it to my sponsor. That was huge in that the feedback I got as I began to go through the resentment list, and I would bring out family members and I would say, you know, I resent my brother because of this. And what's my part? Well, my part is, you know, I have expectations of my brother. And it was explained to me, it was amazing how I came to understand when I did that last column of my four step as to what my part in it was. On every one of them, including the ones about family members, of my expectations of other people were completely whacked out. And I had never even considered that. That it's my job to figure out how everybody should be, and if they're not living up to my standard, well, then shame on them. And that blew me away when, you know, I kind of laugh when I didn't tell you this earlier, when I walked off the beach at LBI, I had a stomachache. I had this feeling in the pit of my stomach that I did not like and I didn't want to revisit, and it just was not a comfortable feeling. When I left the reading of my fourth step, I had the same stomachache, the feeling that, oh, I don't really want to be doing this, and I don't know what's happening, but it's not making me comfortable. And as I read that step, and I got to the family member stuff, that was stuff I had held for years and years and years, that anger towards my siblings, that was basically erased as I had to come to realize that I had expectations of people that were not viable. How could I continue that afterwards? After hearing it and understanding that it was really true, that's not realistic for me to have that expectation of that person. That's the basis of my resentment. How could I continue to have it? It was gone. It was lifted. Sitting in a temple reading this thing, and it's gone. Something I carried for years and years. Other ones, a high school guidance counselor whose sole fault it was that I didn't go to college out of high school. This little old 60-year-old guy, it was his fault that I didn't go to college. And he was on that boy. And I really had resentments against him. I mean, over the last 20 years, I thought about him a lot as I would sit and study at night, because I eventually went back and got my degree at night. I thought about this guy more than I'm willing to admit. It came out that, as we talked about it, that it wasn't really about him. It was about, because basically I walked into his office and he said, you know, well, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know, what should I do? And he said, well, you're not really college material. And I walked out, and that was the end of it. So it was his fault I didn't go to college. My sponsor was smart enough to say, you know, did you take any college prep courses? No, I didn't. Did you do anything leading up to that senior last day of school meeting with this guy to prepare yourself for college? No, not at all. So, is it his fault? No, it's not. And once I came to that realization, that was a huge, I mean, these are little things, but there was 18 pages of these little things that I've been carrying around for 20 years. And I walked out of that temple, I can never be mad at this guy again. It's an amazing, amazing process. So that was the big first half of it was that night, getting rid of all that stuff. still, I had that stomachache because it was emotionally difficult. But I got rid of all that stuff. The second big part of my fourth step was the month after that. Things happening in life that I now saw, having the knowledge of my part in all these old, in these things that I had done, all these new circumstances that would come up, and now I have this knowledge of what my part in things, what I can do if I'm not paying attention or if I'm not doing it right, what my part, you know, the damage my part can do, has changed the way I deal with things on a daily basis. And that's, I mean, that's a big deal. It's a big deal to say, well, you know what, yeah, this is how, am I expecting too much of this person when I'm doing something? Slowly, and very gradually, over the month after I did that, the way I handle things now has changed, and that is the other big part of it. So, talk about my sponsor. Another quick story that happened very recently. I heard in program, you know, people say they had trouble getting out of their own way, and that was when I first heard that was definitely me. I always had a lot of trouble getting out of my own way. And I've also heard do the next right thing. All I have to do is do the next right thing, and I didn't really ever understand what that meant. And I'm like, well, now I could spend all day wondering what the next right thing is. Is it this? Is it that? And I could spend hours, you know, kicking it back and forth in my head. Last week I was walking into a meeting, and this particular meeting was giving out pieces of paper with OA members' phone numbers on it to call them during the week. And as I'm walking up to the meeting, I saw the person was handing out these sheets, and I knew what they were because I had gotten one, I don't know, a few weeks before, or a month before. And I saw the person had seen me, and I thought they were looking through the list, looking for an appropriate phone number to give to me. And that immediately struck my nerve of, who the hell are they to pick out who they're going to give me to call? You know, this is God's will, not so-and-so's will, not that person's will. It's supposed to be God's will, right? So who are they to be choosing and picking and choosing who I need to talk to? So they're, you know, so immediately I got all in my own way and began to decide that I wasn't going to take a number. And I went up and the person handed me the number, and I think I even said something like, well, you're picking out who I'm supposed to talk to or something. I don't even know what I said. So I took the number anyway. I put it in my pocket. So now, whatever. So it wasn't until the next day I was again walking with, thank God for this person in my family who I walk with on a daily basis, who is in another fellowship. I hadn't even mentioned that. They were talking about doing the next right thing. And they told me a story about something they were involved in, and that the next right thing, what it involved was just doing what was right regardless of what was going on. And it immediately came to me that the right thing to do, doing the next right thing, as I was walking into that meeting, and the minute I saw that person going through the list, the next right thing to do is to take the phone number because somebody needs a phone call. Regardless of what I think and what my ego thinks that person is doing or not doing, and what I think they're orchestrating or not orchestrating, doesn't matter. The next right thing is what that person's trying to do, is to take that phone number and call somebody who in program who may need a phone call, and that helped me figure out what the next right thing is, and that I, long before I get into the games of kicking back and forth in my own head, what's right, what's not, just do the next right thing. I'm going to keep my eyes out now for that. Is it as plain as that? Boom! I'm just going to do it. If I can see it, it's the next right thing. I'm just going to do it. And I need to ask for help in doing that. So those are basically all of my big stories. I just wrote down some notes of things about how I was then and how I am now in OA, because there were a lot of little individual pieces that didn't go in any kind of order, but they're things that I wanted to kind of share with you. Before OA, being hungry for me was not an option. I always had access to food. Getting hungry or being, you know, really hungry was not an option. I didn't let myself get that uncomfortable because I had access to it, so I just always kept myself full. Satisfying my need for hunger was the primary goal. It was just like the alcohol for me. I wouldn't go anywhere where there wasn't alcohol. I wouldn't go to a restaurant that didn't serve alcohol, and I would have stocks in the house in case something, you know, something happened. It was the same thing with food. And I think it had a lot to do with fear, because I didn't know what would happen if I did not give in to my hunger, and I was not willing to find that out because I didn't have a fallback plan. Now with program, the fallback plan is I have a higher power who's going to take care of me, which going back to my fourth step, that played a huge role. I would not have been able to do my fourth step if I did not have my higher power to fall back on, because I knew somebody was going to take care of me, and I knew that I wasn't alone. I don't know that I would sit there and put all this stuff on a piece of paper and start reading it to somebody else if the only thing I had to go back to was me being by myself with no help. I could never do it. I think I would just be too afraid to do it. So that was a key part of being able to do that. So then being hungry was not an option. Now in OA, I was taught by the folks in this room that no one's ever died between lunch and dinner. And a lot of these things sound like just old sayings that you hear over and over, and we've all heard them, and I haven't said a new thing to you guys tonight that you haven't heard already. But they work. Nobody's died between lunch and dinner. I didn't used to know that, believe it or not. I didn't used to know that. And I also learned that if I waited, the feeling of hunger would go away. That feeling that I had to have, that I just could not, I needed to eat something more, that this was not going to be enough. If I waited, every single time that's gone away. And after a while of doing that, I now have faith that when I eat what I'm supposed to eat, no matter how much I know that that's not going to be enough and it's not going to take me through to the next one, if I wait, it does. It's happened over and over and over again, to the point now where I'm comfortable with that. Before program, I would not and I could not ask for help from anybody for anything, carrying heavy things, whatever it was, planning something. No, I don't need you. I'm fine. I've got it. I'll take care of it. And I would refuse help from anyone. I just couldn't take it. I couldn't accept help. And I think there were a lot of different reasons for it, but they all boiled down to a false pride that I could do it. And I didn't want you thinking that I couldn't do whatever it was I was trying to do. And my first few months in program, that was me working my steps the way I needed to work them without anybody getting in the way. That was all part of that false pride. Now that I'm in OA, and it's just kind of a byproduct of working the steps, I can let people help me, and I can accept gifts now. I used to have a real problem accepting gifts. And since being in program, I don't have a problem with somebody giving me a gift. I can say thank you. I appreciate it, and not try to give it back, which was a big thing for me. Then I knew, before OA, I knew that the source of all my problems were other people, whether it was work or family or school. I knew that the source of all the things that bothered me came from basically other people. It wasn't so much situations, but other people, the way they acted or they weren't doing things my way. I learned from the big book on page 62. It says that basically our troubles are of our own making, and that I now know to be absolutely true, because when I surrender these things that bother me now that I think are about other people, they're relieved, and those people haven't changed at all. Nothing in this entire world has changed except for how I see things since I've come into this program. And that's an amazing thing, to have so many changes in my life happen and realize that everybody else around me and all my situations are still the same. Yet, I feel like I'm on a different planet. It's an incredibly powerful, powerful thing. Ego. Going into step four was a big, big ego reducer for me. I did not believe I had an ego. I was always very accommodating to everyone, and I remember my mother saying, "Oh, you don't have any ego at all." And what was amazing was my ego was so out of whack that I secretly knew I was better than everybody, and I didn't share that with anybody. I just knew that, you know, I had it going on, and I was smarter or funnier or more in tune or knew what people were thinking better than other people, and I had everyone in every situation figured out. And I think now, in a way, I've learned humility to a large degree, and I'm still learning it. I understand now that those stomach aches that I referred to before, it was the puncturing of my ego. It was that feeling of, I'm wrong, and I've been doing this thing wrong, and there is an answer out there, but I don't know what it is yet, and I'm working towards it. Our invitation to you, which says to face the truth about ourselves. That's no small thing, to face the truth about ourselves. That for me, again, without the help of a higher power to lean back on and say, okay, I give up, I can't do it, and I give up. Without that to lean back on, I would not be able to face the truth about myself at all. Now I understand that when it comes to you guys, I don't have a clue what's going on with you. I barely have a clue what's going on with me, and that I have no answers for you. And that change, I always had to have an answer for everybody. And now people ask me questions, I think they get upset because I say, I don't have any idea. And I'm getting more and more comfortable with the idea of saying to you, I don't have any idea. Because I don't. It's a nice place to be. It's a lot easier to be in a place where I really don't know what's best for you, sorry, than being in a place where I feel I have to know what's best for everybody. I say that my life is infinitely easier now in program than it ever was before, and that is absolutely true. I there's so much now that's gone from my daily life of dealing with people and figuring out everything that has to be done. So much of that is gone. It's just so much easier to live a life where I don't have the answers. And I'm just following, and I'm trying to do the next right thing. I'm trying to be honest, and I'm trying to do what the steps teach me. Right now, I'm at step 8, I'm 2 years in program. So I am taking my time and thoroughly doing everything. My sponsor keeps me in line and keeps me moving along, and keeps me studying. Anytime I think I'm going to take a break for a while, we just take out the books and study and write and study and write, and it's the benefits of that are huge. There was a couple of one errant piece of information as to how messed up things were before program. In 1999, I was diagnosed with kidney cancer. I weighed 260 pounds, and I was told by the doctors at Sloan Kettering that they had no proof, but they believed that obesity contributed to kidney cancer. It was one of the major contributing factors of kidney cancer. And after surgery, I was amazed, along with my family, that I continued to gain weight when I came home. I got bigger and bigger and bigger and worked my way up to 320 pounds post-kidney cancer. And it didn't make any sense to me. My wife would say, as I stood in front of the refrigerator, and I vividly remember this because it happened all the time, and eating something, she would say, you just had dinner, what are you doing? And she would say, just like, what are you doing? And I would say, I don't know. I don't have any idea, and I would just keep eating. And I realize now, since I'm in OA, that was the only way I knew how to deal with anything. I had no other tools at all to handle getting kidney cancer at 30 years old. That for me, that was a big deal back then. And how did I have to deal with it? I had one tool. And unfortunately, the one tool I had to deal with it is the one you don't want to have when you to keep that from coming back again. So it was not surprising. Now I understand why. Why, the answer to all those questions of why, because that was my tool. That was how I dealt with it. And the beauty of the 12 steps is now I'm learning through listening, through going to meetings, listening to other people, how they deal with things and what they do, and they work their way through their feelings, they feel their feelings, all the things that I'd never paid any attention to and didn't understand. It's why I love going to meetings and why I walk out of meetings with a smile on my face over and over and over again, because I learn something at every single meeting. Somebody says something that talks to me and gives me more information on how I need to live. And to quote my sponsor, it's a wonderful way to live. Before program, I had issues with anger because I had nowhere to turn with it. It would sit and fester. I just had a memory of being in the back door of my house and slamming. My wife had said something to me
or asked me a question, and I got so angry, I don't remember what the question was, that I began slamming the door over and over and over again, trying to break it. And it was the reason I remember that is because I was so incredibly angry, and I had nothing to do with that. I didn't know what to do with it, and I was taking it out on the door. In OA, I have felt serenity, or what we call serenity. And that has changed. That is the polar opposite of those feelings I had when I was slamming those doors. The feeling of serenity that I've had in program is the feeling that everything is okay. And that it's just a sense of well-being, that I'm not alone, and that for today I have everything I need. I may not have everything I want, but for today I absolutely have everything I need. And for me, that's the key to maintaining my serenity. Because no matter what's going on in life, if I can sit back and take a breath and remember the blessings, and just sit and count the blessings in my life, my son, my wife, program, my relationship with my higher power, I have everything I need. And that can very quickly now get me into a state of being okay. It's not constant, but it's there, and I know how to get to it, which is important. I guess I'll begin to close with my higher power. Before program, I did not believe in God, and having a belief. I guess one of the best ways for me to illustrate it is I used to have a problem with waking up in the middle of the night and worrying about those around me, my people close to me dying, whether it was my wife, my family, and most recently my 5-year-old son. Just waking up and saying, well, what if he gets sick, or what if he gets something happens to him, or if he dies, or what if I die, and what's going to happen with him? And I would just lay awake for hours, and it would... I couldn't get back to sleep. It would make me nuts, and I hated that incredible loneliness. Even though I was there, my wife was next to me, I was still completely alone. There was no one that could help me with those fears. Since program, since I have a higher power, that has not happened, because I now have this resource. When that happens, but I do still wake up. I still wake up at 2 in the morning and go, oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? I immediately say, God, please help me go back to sleep. This is not... I can't lay here thinking about this. Please help me go back to sleep. And I swear to you, every single time I've done it, I'm back to sleep. There has been no hour, half hour, 20 minutes of sitting up fretting over stuff. It's gone. And that is absolute surrender. And it works every single time I do it. And that's more backing for when I wonder if I surrender my food, is it going to work? If I'm going to a party, will I be able to surrender this? I got proof after proof after proof after proof that surrendering works, and that he will take it from me if I give it to him, and if I'm honest about it, if I honestly give it to him, not if I give it to him and take it back. If I turn it over and surrender it, it'll be gone. Last point. One of the biggest parts of program, the things that helped me about program, is I always thought that I had to apply more force to get things out of life. Whatever I wanted, if I wasn't applying enough force, I couldn't get it. And I just had to pile on more, or do more, or study more, or work harder, or whatever I had to do. And I now realize, being in program, that it's about applying less force and applying less of my own energy. And things will come. And the more I get out of my way, and the more I step back and relax, the more just comes pouring in. And that amazes me, that I've been doing the polar opposite of everything, as I've been trying to steer everything and steer everybody and just mash everything together. The more I back off and just let it happen, the more it all comes flowing in, and it's all positive. So I think I'm nearly out of time. So thank you very much. Get a sponsor if you don't have one, and keep coming back.
Okay, at this time, we now open it to the forum for questions. Matt?
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm a leader.
Hey, Matt.
How did you do your sixth step?
I'm coming up to that now. Was it difficult?
It wasn't. I mean, my sponsor really kind of steps me through. We studied it, and for me, I had to memorize the prayer. Don't ask me to say it now. But it was a matter of, I think it really comes down to what your relationship with God is at the point you're ready to do it. With me, it was solid. It was, or at least I felt it was solid. So it was just a matter of doing it. The way my sponsor explained it to me is really you only had to become ready. It wasn't an act of actually doing it. It was just a matter of becoming ready to let God have these things. And I remember having a fear of, I just realized I'm supposed to repeat the question. And if anybody didn't hear the question is, how did you do step six, and how did you get ready to do it? And step six, of course, is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So my sponsor had me just become ready, become willing to turn this stuff over to God and let Him have it. And I just kind of went with the flow, and it was. I would just say, go, be willing, just stay willing, and go with it, and your sponsor will take you through it, and more importantly, your higher power will take you through it.
Chris, do you sponsor, and if you do, how do you sponsor?
I do sponsor. I sponsor the same way my sponsor sponsors me. The way I understand sponsoring the work, or at least the way it works for me, is I can share my experience in working the steps with a sponsee up to the level, that, of course, that I've worked them. So I don't give any advice. I don't have advice. As I mentioned earlier, I can't advise myself, so I definitely can't advise anybody else. If a sponsee says something to me that I've experienced before, I can tell them how I dealt with that particular experience. If they ask me a question I don't know the answer to, I say I don't know the answer to that, but I will find an answer and get back to you on it. But it's mostly because when I first started sponsoring, I was very nervous about, what if they ask me something? I said to my sponsor, you've been doing this for 30 years, you know all the answers, and what if they ask me a question I can't answer? And she said, well, the only questions you can answer are the ones that you've experienced. If you haven't experienced, you can't answer it anyway, so don't worry about it. And that made me relax. And it's amazing how much we can relate to one another when somebody's telling you something. And for me, at least, as people talk to me, I just, the relation, I could relate to what they were saying, and sometimes I could tell them how, you know, how that affected me or what I did when I was in their circumstance.
Again, thank you, Chris.